Why This Movie, a podcast about the movies we love and why we love them. So you'll probably notice that there's a bit of a hum in the background right now. So that's my air conditioner, and there's nothing I can do about it at this moment because it was over 100 degrees today up here in the greater Boston area. And even right now, it is 97 degrees Fahrenheit. It is so hot. There's a heat advisory for the rest of the night. And I'm just going to have to leave the air conditioning on because at this point, I value my life more than the crisp audio quality that you're usually used to. So I apologize, but not really. So today's guest is one of my best friends. His name is Jonathan Paula. He's a YouTube pioneer. He's a return guest. He loves movies. He's seen more movies than I have, which is saying something. And here we go. Here's our interview. How are you staying cool? How are you beating the heat?
Are we already recording? Is this we already in it?
Yeah. Yes. This is important, though.
I need a heads up for that. You always catch me off guard. I'm going to record on my end just in case.
Okay.
How am I beating the heat? Well, you know, I'll tell you what, friend, and you'll be very surprised to hear this because, you know, our friendship is based on a lot of things, mutual hatred of former coworkers, but mostly mostly, and why we're here today, mutual love of movies.
Yeah.
So this will surprise you. I've been keeping cool this week by cracking open a book and doing some reading in front of my living room window. The sun's going down late this time of year, and I can just curl up on the couch with the open window, the box fan on, and I've been reading Blake Crouch's Recursion, which is a twisty, what's the word? I think it's called a techno thriller, about memory travel, time loops. I finished the whole thing in 4 nights. It was the first and only book I've read in at least 10 years.
Yeah, I've never known you to crack open a book.
No, I used to. When I was in school and in high school, and I think maybe in college, I was still reading occasionally. But even then, it was maybe a couple books a year. But my wife was giving me grief, and I think my daughter had asked something along the lines of, why doesn't daddy ever read? And my wife was like, oh, he never will. He'll never pick up a book again. And I was like, oh, yeah?
Sounds
and
just like your wife.
So just out of spite, I picked up a book that night, and I was like, I'm going to read it right now, because I own at least a modest collection of 15 to 20 books that I've bought for myself or my wife has bought for presents, and I just have literally never read any of them. And I thought, this week, you know what? I'm going to. And it was a great decision, and I enjoyed the book quite a bit.
You didn't even read Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, did you?
And I have a signed copy. I met the man in person at Harvard Square some 7 or 8 years back, got a photo with him, got the signed book, but I never did read it. I read
It's probably my favorite book about the creative process.
Because he's a really great writer.
Yeah.
And I did read some of it. I read like maybe a chapter or two. I never ended up finishing it. And that's something I want to work on. That was one of my New Year's resolutions, is not just to start a book, but to actually finish it. So I'm happy to say this week, while I'm suffering through this 105-degree heat wave here in New Hampshire, I finished a fiction book.
Well done, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's the only reason I bring it up is just to receive praise and kudos from you and your audience.
That is how you're beating the heat, so I want to hear about
it. That's right. Absolutely.
All right. So what movie are we talking about today?
Well, we already talked about my number one all-time favorite movie, which is Back to the Future. And for this conversation, you asked me to find a movie that I love that maybe others have slept on, maybe underrated film. And the first movie that came to my attention, came to my thought, was The American President by director Rob Reiner, penned by Aaron Sorkin, starring Michael Douglas and Michael J. Fox and Martin Sheen and Annette Bening. Great, great film. Came out in 1995. It is a romantic comedy set in the West Wing, around Washington, D.C., all the politicking, all the meet-cutes, all rolled into one. I adore this film. Much has been said about Rob Reiner's infamous run of movies from Spinal Tap in the mid-'80s.
Right.
And then he just had a ridiculous run with The Princess Bride and Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me, Misery, A Few Good Men. Just an incredible run of movies. Then he came out with North.
Yes.
In 1994, which mostly everyone agrees is kind of terrible. And then The American President.
Right.
So my question to you is, does The American President count as part of his iconic run? Or is it sort of this weird detached coda that like sits apart from the rest of his very stellar mid-80s to mid-90s run?
I've spent a lot of time thinking about this.
Have you really?
Yes, I have. I believe that we do count The American President as the bookend.
Yes.
I think because, so I'm going to count The American President as the end of that run. And I'm going to count This Is Spinal Tap as the beginning of that run with two outliers, because right after This Is Spinal Tap, there was The Sure Thing, which
I've not seen it yet.
It wasn't like a flop really, but it wasn't at the echelon of the other movies that we're talking about.
Sure.
So we kind of skip over The Sure Thing and skip over North. Yeah, you look at that string and it's unbelievable. I don't know if I've told you, I have a theory that he sold his soul to the devil. but it was a contract that only lasted 10 years.
I think
11
you
years.
You and I have had this discussion, and it's sort of eerie at how well it tracks, because yeah, if you take The Sure Thing and North as sort of these outliers, the other 8 films in that run,
yeah,
Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, Princess Bride, Harry Met Sally, Misery, A Few Good Men, and The American President, 7 films. Mm-hmm. And The Ghost of Mississippi is okay, but let's exclude that.
Yeah, after we're not that, doing that.
After that, like, we have The Story of Us, Rumor Has It, The Bucket List, The Magic of Belle Isle,
yeah,
like just a bunch of
LBJ.
I'm trying to think of a less insulting or derivative way to describe it, but it's all like boomer drama, and it's just not good. It's not compelling. And you flipped a switch and went from someone who had,
it's like two different people.
Yeah. He had an impeccable taste in casting, and he knew how to select the right people. He knew how to, he doesn't have a particular mise-en-scène that like he carries to project that feels like, oh, this is a Rob Reiner composition.
Yeah.
This is a Rob Reiner script. Like Spinal Tap and American President, like, couldn't be any more different. But they both have like that heart and the, I don't know, the passion that so much of his later projects don't. And it is so perplexing that the same man did all of those movies and then did Rumor Has It with Jennifer Aniston just like 8 years later or whatever. Like, what happened?
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know the story, the devil and Robert Johnson.
Yeah. With the guitar, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think something similar might have happened to Rob Reiner. He sold his soul to the devil, got 7 excellent movies out of it. And then the deal was, I don't know, but then after that, you have to make these movies that you'll be embarrassed by. And you can't just retire. You have to keep making movies, and they have to be bad.
The president has asked me to convey to you that he's sending his energy bill to the floor with a call for a 10% reduction.
The president's expecting our full support.
Yes, he is.
The president's dreaming, AJ. The president
Sydney has critically misjudged reality. If he honestly thinks that the environmental community is going to whistle a happy tune while rallying support around this pitifully lame mockery of environmental leadership, then your boss is the chief executive of Fantasyland.
Good morning, Mr. President. How are you today?
I couldn't be better. My apologies for the interruption.
Mr. President, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
All evidence to the contrary. What would happen if I called Sydney Wade and asked her to be my date at the state dinner on Thursday evening?
The president can't just go out on a date.
I'm having dinner at the White House.
I'm having lunch at the Kremlin.
I don't know what happened. One minute I was calling him a mockery of an environmental leader. The next minute I had a date.
She didn't say anything about me.
Well, no, sir, but I can pass her a note before study hall.
Would you like to dance?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yes, sir. I'd love to.
Never mind that she is the hired gun of an ultra-liberal political action committee. And never mind that his 12-year-old daughter is sleeping down the hall.
Lucy, are you okay with this? Am I having dinner with a lady?
Dad,
It's cool. Just go for it.
Never mind any of that, folks. My name is Bob Rumson, and I'm running for president.
In the past 7 weeks, 59% of the country has begun to question your family values.
This poll doesn't talk about my presidency. This poll talks about my life.
I gotta nip this in the bud. This has catastrophe written all over it.
Sydney, the man is the leader of the free world. He's brilliant, he's funny, he's an above average dancer. Isn't it possible our standards are just a tad high?
Do you think there'll ever be a time when you can stand in a room with me and not think of me as the president?
The release of The American President in 1995 came after a long string of hits from director Rob Reiner, beginning with This Is Spinal Tap and including movies like When Harry Met Sally, Misery, and A Few Good Men. With The American President, Reiner cast Michael Douglas as the commander-in-chief, a likable, clear-headed progressive whose wife has died and left him with a daughter. When he meets Annette Bening as the lobbyist hired by an environmental agency, he decides to ask her out, the first time he's hit on someone since his days as a civilian.
Well, I should stop stalling. As you probably know, the French have elected themselves a new president, and we're having a formal state dinner at the White House, and I was wondering, and you're under no obligation at all, but I thought it might be fun, and I was wondering if maybe you wanted to go with me, and, well, that's it. That's why I was calling. Sydney? Sydney, Congress doesn't take this long.
Mr. President, you have asked me to join you in representing our country. I'm honored. I'm equal to the task. I won't let you down, sir.
Sydney, this is just dinner. We're not going to be doing espionage or anything.
No, of course. I'm a little, what do I do? I mean, you know, where do I go? I mean, would you...
What I love about this movie is that it gives what feels like an inside look both at how the West Wing operates and how a romance between a private citizen and the leader of the free world might proceed in modern times. It includes small details like where the president's girlfriend should park when she visits the White House, or how hard it would be for the most powerful man in the world to buy flowers for a woman he likes.
How about roses? Simple, classic, 24.
Janie, I'm the president's senior domestic policy advisor, and it's important I have a full understanding of
it. Janie, do you know where my credit cards are?
They're in storage in Wisconsin with the rest of your personal items.
Right. Perhaps it would be better if you bill me for the flowers. I'm sure it'll be all right with your boss. Well, I don't know if you recognize my voice, but this is the president. In the United States. Hello?
But Andrew Shepard is running for re-election, and his Republican opponent, played by a snarling Richard Dreyfuss, seizes on this romance as a way to attack the president's morals and judgment. Along the way, this film is full of moments that have been conceived by people who deeply love this country. In the end, Rob Reiner, screenwriter Aaron Sorkin, and the all-star cast strike a balance between American ideals and romantic chemistry that comes across as downright pleasant. There's something about the movie that feels optimistic and maybe even kind of corny, but it works. For my money, Michael Douglas as Andrew Shepard is right up there with Martin Sheen and Bill Pullman as one of the best fictional presidents. And Michael Douglas is infinitely more qualified than our current Oval Office occupant, in my opinion.
America isn't easy. America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad, because it's going to put up a fight. It's going to say, you want free speech? Let's see you acknowledge a man whose words make your blood boil, who's standing center stage and advocating at the top of his lungs that which you would spend a lifetime opposing at the top of yours. You want to claim this land is a land of the free? Then the symbol of your country cannot just be a flag. The symbol also has to be one of its citizens exercising his right to burn that flag in protest. Now show me that. Defend that. Celebrate that in your classrooms. Then you can stand up and sing about the land of the free.
Of all the thousands and thousands of movies I've seen, this is the one I've watched the most since I began logging films 20 years ago. Ah. So not only have I seen it 14 or 15 times, I know the exact date of each one of those 14 or 15 times. Whereas most of my other favorite movies, like Star Wars or Back to the Future or Indiana Jones, I found those when I was a kid. I found this one when I was like in my 30s, like, right, or 20s anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's, I there's not a lot of movies I discovered late in life that instantly became like annual perennial watches for me like this one did.
I'm aware that you do watch it usually every year on the same night as the State of the Union.
That is correct. You have a great memory. Yeah, usually, and especially since you know who was elected the first time.
Yeah.
I did not want to watch 90 minutes of this, you know, blowhard, what's the word, bloviate, whatever the word, when you just expel
bloviating
oxygen. Bloviating, that's, yeah, it, thank you.
That's all that reading that you're doing.
Right, I'm trying to work in my Sorkinisms and stuff. I had no interest in watching the State of the Union, whereas while I was in college, and I was maybe, you know, a little bit more politically active on YouTube, I enjoyed watching the State of the Union every year. It was sort of appointment viewing in our house. But then once he was elected, it's like, yeah, no, that's just going to bum me out. It's going to make me angry or depressed or bored, or a combination of all three. So instead, I'll watch The American President, which really, in a really great way, ends right on the announcement at the beginning of the State of the Union. The last line in the movie is, "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States," and then he walks into the Senate chamber or the congressional chamber.
Yeah.
I love watching dated movies on their date. Independence Day, of course, on July 4th. Terminator 2 on its fictional. Judgment Day, August 29th. Back to the Future on its pivotal date, which is November 12th. I try to line up movies where I can. I like to watch Jaws around the 4th of July, mm-hmm, and, you know, this time of the year, for the same reason as Independence Day. It's a good summer movie. But yeah, State of the Union, American President. It's a good mix.
So would you say that since our current president was elected the first time 9 years ago, that it's sort of been like a way, watching the movie now is sort of a way to witness an alternate reality, an alternate White House Washington reality?
I will say the film has taken on a new perspective in the last few years, as our country slides further and further into just sort of a dystopian fascist hellhole that is unrecognizable to what I want the country to be. It is nice and a bit of sort of fantasy wish fulfillment to slip back into that Camelot-esque Clinton-era Sorkin-written utopia of like, what if central liberalism actually did rule the day and smart people argued with each other for the betterment of society and didn't just like dick measure until everyone lost. It is really, it's really like safe and comforting to go back into this universe the same way it is to rewatch The West Wing. Mm-hmm. And for those who aren't familiar, The American President is effectively the pilot, or, you know, the proto example of The West Wing, because Aaron Sorkin took a bunch of the actual actors and some of the same characters, some of the same lines of dialogue, some of the same plot elements from this, you know, 105-minute movie and adapted them directly into the first couple seasons of The West Wing. So if you like this movie, you'll love West Wing and vice versa. And for the same reason, right? If you watch The West Wing today, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so refreshing. Is this how smart people figure out problems together?
Yeah.
It is, but it's not how the real West Wing operates.
Yeah, I think when The West Wing was airing, it was sort of seen as an alternate reality that people could escape to who didn't want to, sure, deal with George W. Bush.
Yes. Absolutely.
And now we think like how good we had it when we had George W. Bush. Comparatively speaking.
It is a funny thing to say, but yes, that is true.
So you touched on this, but the movie does kind of have like what I would say is a uniquely 90s optimistic feel. Were you aware of any of that when you, because you would have turned 10, I guess, when this movie came out, right? 90 to 95.
So I would have been, yeah, just a couple months shy of turning 10 years old. And I did not see the movie, though, until much, much later in my life.
Right.
But would I have been aware of, I don't know, just general U.S. politics? Maybe. I remember following the Ross Perot, H.W. Bush, Clinton election in 1992 in first grade. I think we had a mock election in class.
Yeah, we did.
Voted. And I remember that was kind of a big deal. And by 1996, which would have been when this movie came out, right, during the election cycle of that year, I was familiar with Bob Dole and Clinton, probably only because of the Treehouse of Horror episode of The Simpsons that came out around that same time. Like, I remember that was like my exposure to Bob Dole, was that he talked slow and he was old and he held a pencil because of his hand. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I knew about him at the time, but I didn't really appreciate or understand the inner workings of functional government, or, you know, the politicking of getting votes on the Hill, or convincing, you know, McElmorny and McCluster and the guys they're talking about in this film. Like, I don't think I appreciated any of that. And every time I rewatch this film, I pick up a little bit more of the nuance and a little bit more of the detail, and how even though you only see like maybe 12 or 14 characters with any degree of intimacy, you get the sense that like every single person in Congress, Aaron Sorkin wrote down on a map and like figured out how many people are liberal in this fictional world. How many people are conservative? Who are the ones that are actually going to go on Andrew Shepard's team? And like, I feel like there's a lot outside the edges you don't see on the movie that I got the sense that he probably wrote about just in like deep background or whatever.
It's amazing to me how in the weeds it is.
Like, that's a much quicker way of saying it, but yes.
I mean, well, it very much in the weeds, mentioning specific Congress people that we never even see and don't have dialogue, but somehow it still is very accessible.
Right.
And it's not like an independent, obscure movie or anything. I mean, it was a mainstream movie and it did very well. So what do you
think? It won some Golden Globes and everything.
Yeah. If it is so in the weeds, and if it's taking place in the small world of the West Wing of the White House, what do you think it is about it that makes the movie work? Because, I mean, there's the romantic comedy part of it, but that by itself, you can't really separate that from the rest of the bigger picture going on.
Oh, certainly not. If this movie was just about like a widower, some widower in a high profile job, Michael Douglas in literally any other role he did in the 90s, right? He's an ad executive in New York and he's got a 16-year-old kid or whatever, and he wants to start dating again and he falls in love and maybe it's not appropriate because of his position and it causes a bit of a scandal. Like, it doesn't work. It works. This movie works because of the backdrop. Everything and I love about it is related to the West Wing element of it all, the getting to see behind the curtain and taking long dolly shots through the executive mansion, up the stairs into his house. And I just love the entire backdrop of it. That being said, Annette Bening gives an incredible performance. She's so sweet and earnest and innocent in this role. And there's like a real vulnerability to both of them. There's a great, great moment right before they, when they consummate their relationship, where President Andrew Shepard says to her, I want you to understand that the phrase most powerful man in the world, that refers to my title only.
Yeah.
And like, you can see, this is a man that's like literally about to, you know, bed a woman in the Lincoln bedroom, and he's afraid of like how he'll perform and what that status means. And there's just something really cute and endearing about two adults falling in love when neither one of them are really ready for it or prepared for all of the fallout and navigating that space. But all of that being said, mostly it works because of Aaron Sorkin. He is the greatest screenwriter maybe of all time. Certainly like top three or four, in my opinion. And he makes all of it sing. It's just pitter-patter. Everyone has the absolute best comeback and the best thing to say right when they need to say it. I've heard Sorkin's writing described as, you know, when you get in an argument and then you can't think of something to say. And then later that night in the shower, you finally think, oh, that's what I should have said.
Oh, yeah.
Sorkin's movies are like, what if everyone did say what they meant to say exactly at the right time? They had the perfect comeback and the perfect timing. That's what everyone in Sorkin's world is well-spoken. They're lucid, they're erudite, and they're able to just espouse all of this brilliantly, perfectly, impeccably, without missing a syllable. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that, too. It's sort of adjacent to competency porn. It's just smart people doing things well. And I've always loved movies where smart people do things well. Star Trek is a great example.
You know, as a side note, I went on a date with somebody who was a server in New York for a while, and she waited on Aaron Sorkin once. She said the way he ordered his food was exactly like his character's talk. It was snappy. It was smart. It was rhythmic. He knew exactly what he wanted and the way he wanted it made. I thought that was nice to know that. I would love to encounter that myself.
That is incredible, and I'm glad to hear that. And I have had moments thinking to myself where I'm in my own internal dialogue, like, first of all, am I rambling too much? Am I using too many big words? Is the audience following this train of thought? Should I dumb it down? Should I go slower?
You did say bloviating earlier.
Well, I screwed it up, though, too, which is part of what, you know, I'd like to keep it real. But part of me also is consciously where, like, no, I shouldn't, like, deliberately slow down or dumb down my thought process. Because I wish more people did speak like Aaron Sorkin. And I want to celebrate intellectualism and people that are well-spoken. If you have a lexicon of 40,000 words, stretch it out. Like, let me see that. Because we keep seeing headlines that something like 23% of America is literally illiterate. And that is not only frustrating and frightening, it's also disappointing because, like, I want to live in a world where people do talk well. I want to look on my phone every day and find a new word that I didn't know before. And it's frustrating that, you know, I don't talk to people that introduce me to new vocabulary very often, because it's like, yeah, most people stick to the same 2,000, 3,000 words. And whereas you watch a Sorkin script and it's like, what? What is that? What did he just say? What is that? I need to look it up. There's literally a line in The American President where, after he gives this soaring, raucous speech in the press room, it's kind of the emotional climax of the movie, all of his aides and his staff pop out of the room, and Michael J. Fox says, I think you got all the press corps looking up how to spell the word erudite. And it's such a great moment because I had to look up the word erudite, and now it's part of my language. I used it earlier. It's great. And I love that.
The filmmakers, Aaron Sorkin and Rob Reiner especially, the guys behind it, how do you think they feel about America? I don't necessarily mean their political views. I mean more about, like, the ideals of America, because even from the beginning with the music, the opening sequence, and all those portraits of past presidents, it's like a very romanticized view of it. I guess I'm talking more about that.
Yeah, I would say, and Rob Reiner's been no slouch for, you know, nationalism and Americanism and patriotism. He opens A Few Good Men with this awesome ROTC gun routine on the lawn of the Naval Academy.
Right.
And it's just, it has nothing to do with the plot. It's just, we need something to put credits over. Mm-hmm. And it's such a meticulously photographed scene that's just like, yes, America is excellent. And I get the sense that both of these men, like you and I, love this country deeply and dearly, but are frustrated with the direction and the just the tenor of the discourse lately has just been not great. It's negative. It's toxic, and it's combative. And I hope we can go back to a world. I don't know if we ever really had a world like the American president.
Even
in 1995, this would have been a little rosy and a little too optimistic, even by that standard. But certainly by today's standard, it feels like a completely different universe to think like, oh, you mean the president would get in trouble for having a date after we elected a felon who had sex with a porn star out of, like, no, like, this, if anyone balked at that today, it would be like, well, get out of here. You have literally no moral standing.
I mean, yeah, it's easy to look back at the 90s and think about how much more civil we were. I guess that's true to some extent, but it was pretty nasty too. I mean, Republicans used to target, like, Chelsea Clinton. They used to say she was an ugly little kid.
That's so rude.
It's awful.
So unnecessary.
It's completely off limits and below the belt, in my opinion, or it should be.
Yeah,
and
right.
Things have always been very uncivil.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely correct.
I think it's like this movie is optimistically done, and it's just kind of wishful thinking. Like you said, a lot of smart people who had different beliefs could still argue in a way that was intelligent and respectful as a way to try and reach some kind of compromise rather than like really getting in the mud and the muck.
I think respectful is a great word to describe this movie. It doesn't just portray an intelligent and patient and compromisable, political arena. It also represents a respectful one. Richard Dreyfuss is by all accounts the antagonist in the film, but he's kind of in the background. He's just sort of a means to an end to move the story along. He's not much of an obstacle for anyone. But even that, we're meant to believe by the end of the movie that he's sort of roundly defeated by just well-spoken rhetoric.
Right.
And we don't know what happens to President Andrew Shepherd in his re-election campaign. Did he beat Bob Rumson? We don't know. We can only assume that. He made one good speech, so that's it. Like, did the poll swing in his favor? He was losing ground among
most likely.
That's what we're led to believe that's where it would have gone. And I love the idea that within this universe, someone just standing their ground and articulating their beliefs passionately and enthusiastically is enough to be like, you know what? He's right. Because these days, that's meaningless. It doesn't matter what you say or even what you do. It's just like, whose team do you play for and how tough do you look on a poster? And it's just the rhetoric-based arguments of the past are gone. And this movie, whenever I watch it, fortunately and thankfully, allows me to maybe for 105 minutes forget.
Right. Like maybe we never had that world exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
But it's aspirational.
Right.
Yeah.
So what does it say to you that in the past 7 weeks, 59% of this country has begun to question your family values?
The president doesn't answer to you, Lewis.
Oh, yes, he does, AJ. I'm a citizen. This is my president. And in this country, it is not only permissible to question our leaders, it's our responsibility. But you already know that, don't you, Mr. President? Because you have a deeper love of this country than any man I've ever known. And I want to know what it says to you that in the past 7 weeks, 59% of Americans have begun to question your patriotism.
Look, if people want to listen to
me, they don't have a choice. Bob Rumson is the only one doing the talking. People want leadership, Mr. President. In the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone. They want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand.
All right, so let me ask you this.
Sure.
This movie does kind of deal with optimism as its currency, and there's a decency to it. Is there anything as we some say we're at the precipice of World War III, is there anything that you feel optimistic about in the sense of the nation we live in, the world we live in? Or is hope for losers, as Richard Dreyfuss would say?
That's a good quote. I am a hopelessly optimistic person. I think life would be a great deal more depressing if not. And it is, unfortunately, for a lot of people. For me, though, I think, right, there's a great quote, I think it was MLK, "The arc of history is long and it bends towards justice." So I firmly believe that all of the trials, tribulations, and, you know, fascism is momentary, and it might be a long moment, but I believe it's momentary. And I think generally most people, conservatives, red hats, and liberals, and international immigrants and refugees and all, I think mostly, by and large, people want the world to be a better place. I don't think anyone wants to destroy things. I don't think any sovereign nation with atomic capabilities is itching to drop bombs and send us all to the Stone Age. I think generally, collectively, most people are good. And I know that given enough time and enough opportunity, we will eventually get better. I think that's sort of how we have to evolve. We can't necessarily go backwards. Everything in between is a stumble or a setback, but I don't think any of it's permanent. And I think 100 years from now, we will look back and be like, wow, we were terrible then. Like, how did we get past it? But we did get past it. And I think consistently when faced with insurmountable odds or trying times, the Civil War, the Dust Bowl, civil rights, like we always come out ahead and we always come out better. And I think, again, America and indeed the world will at some point, hopefully soon, hopefully in our lifetime, be a much better place for everybody. I have to believe that, because if not, what the hell are we doing? Just sort of whittling our time and wasting our life, you know, grasping onto some nostalgic memory that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, that's my very long answer.
Thank you for listening to Why This Movie. If you have a movie that you love that you'd like to talk about, email me at christopherallenmaloney@gmail.com, and you may be featured on an upcoming show.
Please remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, and hit the subscribe button so you always know when we have a new episode released.